Sam was a very unusual child right from the start. He seemed to be a bit of a rebel, and he was actually heavily into superheroes and quite a liability to drop at play centre and things like that, because he was quite he went through quite a violent patch, really. He probably would be on ADD medication these days. And then slowly he just kind of changed and became quite intellectual and did a lot of reading, and suddenly he really wanted something to look after. And we already had this beautiful old golden retriever, Rasha, and I thought that was enough for one for our family, our sort of vaguely dysfunctional family. And then one day he overheard another mother at preschool offering me a kitten. And she did it in a very loud voice. And unfortunately, Sam heard, and he said, oh, wow, we're getting a kitten. So there wasn't much argument.
And it's really, really hard, isn't it, as a parent to say, no, that's actually not what you heard. And I've made no promises whatsoever, because all they heard is kitten coming home.
That's right. That's right.
Did you feel that you had, at the time, a really nice, neat little family? Mum, dad, two kids and a dog. I mean, that's kind of suburban family life, isn't it?
Yeah, well, on the surface it was like that. But we were actually both very young when we'd got married. And Steve was from the UK and I was from basically a country town in New Zealand. And, you know, there were cultural differences apart from our extreme youth. And we were trying to cover up a few sort of patches, really, that were there. And we were doing our best to try and get on with it, but it wasn't the happiest of marriages at that point.
Back to Sam and the kitten. Somehow or other, he talked you round. Somehow he got you deciding that, yeah, a kitten would be a nice addition to the household.
Yes, well, we ended up having to go and see these jolly kittens. And, of course, they were... The mother was exquisite. She was Abyssinian, and there was just this little mixture of Abyssinian-looking kittens and black ones, because she'd had a night out on the town with some local Tom. And, of course, the boys ran forward and wanted to hold them and everything. And I thought, oh, even though my heart was melting, I thought I was still not going to get one. And then he clinched the deal by saying, Mum, it's my birthday soon. All I want for my birthday is a kitten.
And it's real. It's really, really hard for a parent to kind of refuse that.
Well, he was smart enough to know that. And only one kitten was left, and it was the runt, and it had hardly any hair, and it was black. It wasn't one of the glamorous bronze ones, and it could barely breathe. It was so little, and the friend who owned the cat said that the kitten had barely survived the first few days. But she said, I think that one's got good spirit, because it's had to fight to survive.
The thing is, with children and animals, as you witnessed, I'm sure, then, and you've known since then, is that, children don't see that kind of weakness in an animal, do they? They just see its cuteness. They see the potential for a friend for life in something that small and that vulnerable.
There are just so many lessons in animals, aren't there, for both adults and children. I suppose in some ways they're very good practice for the losses that we all suffer later in life, you know. It's just one of those things. It was a beautiful sunny day, and they'd been to see some Walt Disney movie about, The Rats of Nim, and they were feeling very, Sam and Rob, very pro-animal, and they'd found a wounded pigeon under the clothesline at home, and Sam just desperately wanted to take this pigeon to the vet, and I was out visiting a friend who was sick, and Steve was at home, my husband, and once again, Sam used that very strong will of his and said he was going to take the pigeon to the vet, whatever, so they put it in a shoebox, the two boys, and Steve said they could walk down the road to the vet's. There was one down the hill. And they crossed the little footbridge down, because Wellington's a very hilly city, down below our house, and there was a bus stop there, and Sam was just so engrossed in this bird in the shoebox that he stepped out behind a bus at a parked, and he was just hit by a car coming down the hill and killed just about immediately. So it had a devastating effect on Rob, Sam's younger brother, and for us, well, anyone who's experienced this sort of thing, and I know there'll be people listening to this who have, you know, it's not that extraordinary, but it just tears your life into two bits. The before, when you had that person in your life and the after.
And anybody who's experienced the sudden loss of a family member, especially the sudden loss of a child, will identify that for weeks you kind of go into shutdown, don't you?
Absolute shock.
And you function on one level, you function on so many other levels, you must sort of sleepwalk through life.
You do.
And you had all the process of the immediate fallout of Sam's death to deal with, the ever-widening cracks in your marriage as well. Then comes this knock at the door.
Yeah.
From the original lady who Sam had overheard talking about this little kitten, saying, hey, I've got the kitten here. Here you go. Have it.
I'd completely forgotten about this kitten. You know, that was from our former life. And in fact, when I first saw this thing she pulled out of her bag, I thought it was a toy. I thought it was something she'd made maybe for Rob. But it was this tiny little kitten. It was still tiny. I thought, oh no, I can't handle a living thing to look after. I failed raising one son. I can't handle a kitten. And I was just about to tell her to take it away when Rob came around. Rob was only 6 behind me and said, oh, Sam's kitten, it's my kitten. And, you know, it was the first time I'd seen him smile since the accident. And, you know, it was a big shift in Rob's attitude to identify with another living creature that had also lost its siblings. And it changed something in him. And he hadn't been able to sleep in his old bed in the room that he'd shared with Sam, but he managed to embrace this kitten and take it back to his old bed, and together they kind of faced the new nights. They weren't alone anymore, they were together. Oh. So it was really helpful, and helpful with the terrible nightmares that Rob had been having. Cleo very quickly demonstrated that she had her own agenda, and that was to, in some strange way, take responsibility for us. And part of that was bringing laughter back into the household. I was terrified that she just was not going to get on with Rata, the beautiful golden retriever. And they'd been, I thought, snarling at each other, but in fact Rata had the whole time just been wanting to adopt this little scrap of life. And she helped heal Rata, who'd been plunged into grief too. She hadn't been able to wag her tail. She seemed to know what had happened. I mean, pets are extraordinary things. And there was a very bleak moment that I've written about in the book when I was in the bathroom and just thinking, I cannot go on with this. I think pills are the answer and a bottle of something powerful. And boy, you know, you do face some awfully bleak moments. And I was just sitting there thinking, I can't go on. And this tiny black paw appeared around the edge of the bathroom door. Mm. And as if to say, what on earth do you think you're doing? You know, how can you be so sorry for yourself? Don't you realise how much everyone has to suffer? Cats suffer, animals suffer, people suffer. You know, your job is to get on with it.
It wasn't just in kittenhood, though, that Cleo was magic for your family. There were points throughout her rather lengthy life, 23 and a bit for a cat. I mean, that's quite extraordinary. But there were moments throughout her life where she helped soothe you. She helped an ailing Rob at one point when he was desperately ill in hospital. Mm. Your new daughter, born a couple of years after Sam's death, helped you all in some way through her life.
She did. And after my marriage finally ended and I started embarking on perhaps trying to find a new man, and there weren't too many contenders, Cleo actually became a kind of, you know, she would stand at the door and suss out any man that came into the house and make a very quick decision about whether he was acceptable or not. And most of them she didn't like.
So when you met Phil, your second husband, what was it, a case of, you know, immediately wrapping herself around his legs, or, you know, jumping on his lap, or nuzzling his hand? What was it?
It was instant rapport. I remember he was wearing corduroy trousers. I remember that because he's ex-military and so meticulous and I'm so messy. And I remember this cat leaping up onto his lap and thinking, oh no, he's going to hate having this cat on his beautifully pressed clothes. But he didn't, and I thought, there's more to this man than meets the eye.
Accept me, accept my cat.
Exactly. That's what it had become. And at that stage, because she was a black cat and I was a woman alone, I'd started to feel a bit like a witch, you know, and we'd sit out on the back deck and stare up at the moon together. And, you know, we got even closer during that time.
Mm. So Cleo came into your life, your family's life, just days after you lost your eldest child.
Mm.
Cleo was with you through getting through and around that grief. Cleo was with you when you had your daughter, with you when you went through your divorce, with you when you were meeting men, unsuitable and otherwise, with you when you met your second husband, with you when you had your next daughter, right the way through until the end when you had to make the most awful decision that it was time for her as well.
Mm. It's a decision we all end up having to make. And I must say, I had fought it off for years. I remember she kept really good health. And when she was about 16, taking her to the vet, and the vet said, oh, are you sure she's that old? And I said, well, I know exactly how old she is. He said, well, you know, she should have died 6 years ago. So just give her these antibiotics. And if it doesn't work, don't worry. Well, she bounced back really quickly from that one. But when she'd got to 23 and a half, the options had kind of run out. Hmm. And in a way, you know, I think she was quite okay about it. I think she'd had enough. And I think she felt that our family had got to a point where we could actually cope without her. I think she actually felt she was guardian of our household for all those years and that we needed her then. And I think she thought, well, they've got themselves sorted out a lot better. I can go now. But, you know, the odd thing is she's almost with us now even more than she was when she was alive because so many people have related to the story. And I feel her power even more now. Mm. It's quite unusual.